You're looking younger than last time I saw you.
Do I?
Yeah, you look much younger, as if you've still got 10 years younger. We were always quite young, but you now look very young.
Yeah, it's funny, like Benjamin Button, eh? Oh, look at that. And you've got a very, I mean, it looks very beautiful there. What lovely artifacts there, haven't you?
Oh, you're looking at the bookcase. Yes, yes, yes.
What's the top one? What's the top one in there with the lots of the plates around them? The little circle.
Let me put my picture up so I can see what you're talking about. So what are you looking at? Oh, that's Krishna.
Ah, okay.
That's Krishna. It's somebody I bought back at the Bhavan in Baron's Court. And it's a cutout on sort of hardboard. That somebody had just done, and they'd taken pictures from Krishna's life and put them in the little circles and joined the whole. I mean, it's an amazing piece of artwork. It's quite rough if you look at it quite closely, but it was obviously somebody with the right tools for cutting circles and things. And it was a one-off piece that I picked up quite cheaply in the days when they had sales of things that were quite cheap. Nowadays, they only do world famous artists, so we're thinking it's really expensive.
Yeah. It's.
So have you turned this on yet or not?
What was that?
Have you turned your podcast on? Have you started
it? It's recording already.
Oh, right.
The bit. Yeah, I mean, has it been 3 years since we last spoke and met? I think it has, hasn't it? 3 years since I went to America last time we spoke.
It wasn't 3 years ago, was it?
Yeah, 2017, I remember, like, yeah, and you gave me a reading. And then I think that was the, or maybe we met one time before that, but I know that it's been at least a few years.
It was before you went to America, I know that.
Yeah.
But I thought that was last year.
Time flies by, eh? No, it's been, and it's good to see you again. It's like you seem well. I mean, that's all we can hope for at the moment, that we all be well and that we be ready to kick our ass when things get better, really. I mean, that's all we can hope for. And it's good to see you again. And for this is, so my podcast is called Marvin's World for Lena. To anyone that's not sort of met you like I have, could you give a little brief intro on what you're about and what you do?
Right, well, I do palmistry and healing. At the moment, my main emphasis is on healing. Obviously, people can't come and see me with their hands at the moment. So I help people sort out their lives, people who are not happy or they've got relationship problems or work problems, wanting to get people that are needing change, basically. Some people are just plain unhappy and don't know why or think they know why. And I'm doing lots of online sessions with people to help them sort themselves out. And I've been doing this, well, I started doing some online sessions a year ago because I wanted to slowly get it all online as I got older, but the pandemic sort of brought seeing people in person to a sudden stop. So mainly I'm working online. I do the odd readings, sometimes card readings, yes. And I've been doing this, I mean, I learned palmistry in 1973, I think it was, from the then principal of the London School of Palmistry. And I've been reading palmistry ever since. I've been doing healings for over 30 years.
So you released a book, was it in 2012, was it?
The copy, I get to the stage and I actually forget. Its copyright publishing date is 2010. So I think, yes, that would have made sense. I think it came out in April 2010. And it's still going.
And I did a little bit of a read, but it's called, is it Know That You Are Loved, right? That's the name of the title. And the whole purpose, I did a little brief overview of it. As you said before, like you say, your main purpose is to help heal people, like figure out what they're doing in their life and maybe go recover from past trauma in a way.
Yes.
And how does sort of what you do differ to, I don't know, if someone's like a Tony Robbins or what's it called? Like a psychiatrist in like
self-help? Well, I mean, from a Tony Robbins, I think only does people in multitudes rather than singularly. And with a psychiatrist or psychologist or whatever, you can go and see them twice a week, next 10, 20 years, and you may notice an improvement. It varies. Some people do notice an improvement more quickly than that. But I know people who've been going to see some form of psychologist for twice a week for years. And they slowly, they it's more like they begin to understand themselves. Was with healing, it's actually bringing about change. It's releasing the energy that's held in a trauma in the past. And by releasing it, it's like people say to me things like, it's amazing. It's just like something's lifted off me. I just feel a completely different person. I feel as if I'm sitting in my own space for the first time in God knows when. It's these sort of comments I get after a successful healing. And then people often say, well, if they've done a relationship healing with their mother or their father, they will say their parents are being so much nicer to them. And their mother's changed, their father's changed. I do it with people who are having trouble with their lovers or whatever. And at the end of that, they can either see what they're doing wrong and therefore change their behavior and turn what was just about to fall apart into a very good relationship. Or they can see that they're in the wrong relationships and getting out and forgetting about it is the best thing they can possibly do.
So effectively, you'd say that with a lot of self-help and a lot of sort of counseling and all that and like sort of motivational thing, they don't always deal with things all from the inside here and out. You're saying that they're a bit more on the outside rather than perhaps the root of the problem.
Talk therapy can never really get into what's in the unconscious. It's like what's in the unconscious and is messing somebody up. When the client is very relaxed, and I'm obviously very relaxed, it's in that time that information can rise to the surface. But you can never get there by talking about it. You can't get there by thinking. So it's different to an analysing the situation. It's actually finding the core problem and releasing that.
Yes. It's a bit like what I get told in America. Like there is a big, you know, we've seen all the riots and there's a big sort of systematic racism in America. And people say that in America, what they do is they tend to throw money at the problem rather than sort of fix it from the inside out.
Yeah,
it doesn't really solve it, does it? When you just solve the inner, it makes you feel good for a while, but it doesn't sort of bring about permanent change, as it were.
Yeah, permanent change is healing causes rather than trying to deal with symptoms.
Does a bit of psychiatry come into what you do as well?
I doubt it. Well, I mean, I can't really say because I don't really know much about psychiatry. But I would have said that I don't do talk therapy. And psychiatry is talk therapy. Yes, I talk to clients and they talk back, but that's to give me some information so I know where to look. But we're not trying to deal with it by talking about it. It's giving me the necessary information so I can look within them. And often when they just sit in a chair and I put my hands on their shoulders, problems just arise. They just burst into tears or suddenly get very angry or suddenly feel disappointed. And they often don't know why. And we go with that. And it always releases something that's very important.
And but so... Yeah, I think what I meant to say was How much does understanding of human psychology enable you to do your job well? Or what's, let me rephrase it. How does it help you help the person understand psychology, understand the person, and apply what you think's right for them as a client?
Well, I don't think I really use psychology with the person. I'm not certain. So I've read various books on it a long time ago, not recently. So I don't really think you can easily equate my work to psychology, because they are, again, doing talk therapy, and I'm not doing talk therapy, so it's a totally different way of looking at things.
Okay. And you have quite an interesting journey, in a way, in how you sort of came across it. Like, you were a mathematician at first, and you stumbled across it in a way, didn't you?
Well, yes. I mean, in the beginning, I was working in the government, sort of equivalent of the National Health. It was something in pensions, it was called, pension department of the of the government. And we had nothing to do, because they started this department on the assumption the government were about to do something. And in the end, the government didn't do it. Then the government changed parties, and it was never done. So while we were waiting for this, we all had nothing to do in the office all day. And so everybody just read the magazines, all the adverts, anything you could lay your hands on. And through that, I learnt about palmistry lessons, went and had them, learnt and made notes, typed up my notes. Read about it under the desk in the office, as it were, because we all had to look busy with actually nothing to do. So anything that enabled you to look busy was, and the one thing you weren't allowed to do was sit there and stare at the ceiling. You had to be reading something. So everyone was reading magazines because there was nothing else to do.
That's interesting. So when the boss was there, you would be like,
And then when he's... They were all sort of reading magazines as well, but I mean, the whole department had nothing to do. There was something like 30 people, all with nothing to do. One of the things they did to give you exercise was they'd give you a file, didn't have anything in it, it just sort of looked like a file, and send you en route on your feet to another department with a message, which could easily have been done on the phone. But it was a way of getting somebody out the office for a while, because they send you to somewhere that was a few floors away, tell you to walk not too slowly, with a file under your arm, looking as if it was important. And then you would just go and give the message in person and slowly come back. I mean, it was crazy.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what's still happening in a lot of offices now.
I remember now, it was called the Department of Work and Pensions, I think.
Oh. That's, and what, how did you get into that job?
Well, I kind of fell into it, is the best way. I came out of university with an economics degree in 72, and had a long sort of, I think I had a court case came up or something. I mean, it was coming up anyway. It was, I was a victim in an accident, and it took 4 years to get to court. So by the time I got to the other side of that, I then enjoyed some of the money I'd got. And then as people kept telling me I'd missed the boat for that year, and I kept saying you can't miss a boat unless you're waiting for it, and I wasn't. And then round about sort of early 73, I think I started to apply for work. And I applied, I think it was 50 people, 50 different companies I applied for work for. I made a list of them I kept for ages, swearing I'd never buy anything off any of them, as they'd all turn me down one after the other. And then I got this one, it was civil service, it was with the civil service. And I really didn't want the job. I mean, who wants to work for the civil service? And I turned up, and I was completely casual, because everybody had turned me down up to that point. And I didn't want to work for them, and they gave me the job. I was absolutely horrified.
So what you're saying, you didn't want the job, but they...
Yeah, they didn't want it. I was relaxed, and so they gave it to me.
Okay. Yeah, it's they say that in some acting auditions with parts like Game of Thrones and this and that, the actors and actresses weren't too aware what the show was or how big it was. And so they go in the audition relaxed, and then they end up getting the part.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, there were lots of jobs I wanted to get, which I didn't get, and I got stuck in the civil service for a year.
Hmm.
But they really were odd people that worked there. I mean, they weren't normal human beings.
So you must have had a lot of practice then with your healing.
Well, I wasn't into healing then. I was just starting the palmistry. But yeah, I always remember going out to lunch with about 12 of them one day, and I just bought some cheap avocado, well, not cheap, but some reasonably priced avocado pears, and I mentioned it to them, and they all looked at me with a very odd look, and I said, surely you know what an avocado pear is? And they all said, no, they didn't. So I chopped up one avocado pear and gave a slice to each of them, and none of them made any comments, except for one of them that said, well, it's quite nice. But I daren't take one home to my wife. And that was the, you know, total comments from 12 people from a slice of avocado pear for the first time in their lives. They were very conservative minded. They never did anything out of the ordinary. An avocado pear was a sort of non-English fruit, so you didn't eat it.
Ah, okay. So they didn't have anything. They didn't vary their diet. They didn't, you know, they had fish and chips, full English breakfast, nice tea and cakes. But, you know, as soon as they come to a Thai food or Chinese food, they ran away.
Well, I'm not certain they existed Chinese. Yes, they would have existed Chinese food. But I don't remember most of what we ate. I just remember it wasn't a very enjoyable year and I was bored to tears with nothing to do.
So, yeah, it's quite funny. Why do you think that is sometimes with a lot of people? Like, you see some people on TV or you see some people that get famous and they say, you know what, I didn't go out to be a motivational speaker, or I didn't go out to be a businessman or this and that. I just stumbled into it. Turned out I was good at it. Turned out I found it interesting, and then it became my career.
Yes, yes. I mean, it means that you've just... When there's something you're supposed to be doing, you do often sort of land up in it very easily.
Hmm.
Although in this case, I didn't really want to land up there. But when you don't want to land up somewhere, you are relaxed. And people think you're laid back and therefore a good bet.
A mistake not caring for confidence. So you started in palmistry, and then how did you go about, you went to India and Sri Lanka, is that right? And
Nepal. Yes, in 1980, I left a teaching job where I was teaching maths in the boys' school, and I went to India for 2 years. And in that time, I travelled to Nepal and to Sri Lanka. And then I kept going back to India for quite a few years. And I finally got re-established in the UK in the late 80s.
But how did it sort of make you decide that I want to be a medium and I want to go into the realm of, how do you describe it, of being like a psychic and being a medium?
Well, I never really decided I wanted to be a psychic. I was always fairly psychic, naturally, as a child. When I bought my present flat, which wasn't actually my first flat, I had one before I went to India, but I sold that at some point. When I bought this flat, and of course with a mortgage, there wasn't too much spare, and being self-employed, there wasn't too much spare money around, I had this opportunity to do a healing course by somebody called Martin Brofman, who was American, but well, since went on to live in Denmark. At that point, I think he was still living in America. And he came over to the UK to do a healing course as I sort of just tried out. And it was £50 registration and then pay what you like at the end. And I thought, well, that's fine. I'll just pay the £50 registration. I can afford that. And lots of friends of mine said, no, no, they wouldn't do that because they knew they'd be sort of bullied into giving a lot of money at the end of whatever. And because I've been in India, where people are constantly begging off you every few minutes, in order to survive, you learn not to react to people wanting money. So I was quite able to pay £50 registration, do the course and not give any money at the end without feeling any sense of guilt. And from that, I went on to do other courses with him. And it just turned out I had a natural talent for it.
And what drove your passion for it? What made you, what gave your energy to want to do this?
But I think it's when you have successes, it was the successes that, I mean, I remember in the very, very beginning, soon after I'd done the first course with Martin, I was at a friend's birthday party and we'd just finished the main course and her mother was complaining of a back problem that she'd had for 3 months or something like that. And she was going to an osteopath and it wasn't helping very much. So I said, why don't you let me have a go on it? So sitting there after first course, waiting for pudding to turn up, I put my hands on her back and I went through a healing modality in my head for probably a maximum of 10 minutes. And then I said to her, well, how's it feel now? And she said, just before you opened your mouth, the pain went. She wrote to me later and told me the pain never came back. It's that sort of thing. She cancelled her osteopath's appointments, you know, they'd gone for good. It's those sort of things that really, when people are transformed, it just makes one want to do more of it.
Hmm. So the satisfaction of bringing about change and...
Satisfaction of making people's lives better.
And what as a sort of an outsider to it, what would you say are the common misconceptions of your industry that people will have?
Well, I mean, some people just think it's absolute rubbish. But they're normally people who are actually suffer from fear of there being something out there that they don't understand. I remember once on one of my birthdays, I was out with relatives and friends and I was getting more and more drunk. And we went to some type of a psychic fair. Everybody was sort of following me around because it was my birthday. And there was somebody reading the crystal ball. And I tried to persuade one of my nephews, an adult, to go and have his crystal ball read. And he wouldn't. And because I was really, really drunk, I forced him in a way I would not have done if I was sober. And finally he said, no, I won't do it because my life's okay at the moment and I'm afraid they might tell me something bad. And since then I've learned that yes, that people, it's like not, people like to understand the universe they live in. The people that, some people can't handle not having subject matters they don't understand. So therefore, they don't believe in palmistry, psychic stuff, whatever. Because if it were true, it would mean there's something out there they don't understand. So it's better to say it's not true without ever having given it a go to find out. Some people, of course, have given it a go to find out, but they've gone to the wrong people or the wrong people for them. And many people will go to one person, get a bad reading and say everybody is rubbish, which is ridiculous when you think about it. But some people will be unlucky and maybe have two or three bad readings in a row and then think, again, it doesn't work. But it's just that they haven't been to the right person at the right time for them.
So how does one find that?
Well, it's more like you get a feeling when you look at the person's website or somebody tells you about somebody and you maybe look at a photograph of them and you get a feeling about whether or not you think that person could be helpful. I mean, some people go for the I've had lots of people come to me, and I will always ask them, where do they find me from? And they will often say that, well, they just saw my photograph and knew it had to be me. Or they saw that I'd written quite a lot of stuff on my website, and they realized I was fairly genuine because it wasn't just a quickie. And so they got attracted to me. But I've noticed some people in life always go for the cheapest. So they ring around to find the cheapest. And then there are very few that might go for the most expensive. Not necessarily because they think the most expensive is the best, but because they can show off about it later. And the people that go for the cheapest or go for the most expensive, they're going for the wrong reason. They're choosing people for the wrong reason, and they're often disappointed.
So it's about intention.
Well, it's like if you were going to see somebody and you're going to part with a reasonable sum, at least, even if you're not parting with a reasonable sum of money, you normally have to cross London to go and see them, or wherever, going to take half a day out of your life. It's a good idea to do a bit of research first to make certain that you're going to the right person.
What are key things you would look to inform people about your industry and about the other world, as it were?
Well, I mean, if I'm giving somebody a reading, it's whatever comes up in the reading. So it's not sort of key. I mean, most people want to know about their jobs and their love lives. A few want to know about their health, but those are the people who are either totally neurotic about health or actually have a problem that they would like to know whether or not it's going to get better.
Okay.
I mean, at the moment, one does a lot of... for years, I've been warning people about 2020. For the last decade, or more than the last decade, I've been warning people to get their travel in before 2020, because travel could come to a stop. Had a client that sent me a text message at the beginning of the coronavirus telling me that, thanking me for having warned her. In 2014, apparently, I warned that person. But yes, it's like lots of people need sort of help with getting through the next few years or the next few months, or at the moment, nobody can organise anything. So people are not feeling in control of their lives. And that adds to a sense of sort of uncomfort or discomfort.
What do you think is going to happen regarding, I know you put a lot of posts on Facebook, but what do you think is going to actually happen to us as a whole, as a humanity and all that, like once this subsides?
Well, it's like the thing I need to point out is I don't personally do world prophecies. I've never done them. There are too many possibility. There are too much information coming into a world prophecy. It's not like a person has a sort of limited lifespan. The planet can go in all directions. However, I have done a lot of research with people who I know are good people, who do seem to have an ability to look at where the planet's going. And when I find that two or three people who are not connected to each other are saying the same thing, then I feel it has a much greater chance of happening compared to only one person. And from that, what I've come up with is that the worst is supposed to be over by 2022. Like, the world is falling apart, and it needs to fall apart because we need a new world. And the worst of the falling apart will end sometime in 2022. And all the falling apart will end sometime in 2024. And they then say that there's an 8-year rebuilding period. That isn't rebuilding houses. It's like rebuilding thought systems, rebuilding the medical profession, rebuilding politics, rebuilding economics, rebuilding the banking system. All that apparently is going to take 8 years. But this is what I say I have heard from others. They're not my personal prophecies, but my feelings are that, yeah, things are going to get worse. We may look back and think, my God, wasn't quarantine nice compared to what's happening now? There's a kind of feeling at times this is the quiet before the storm.
So you think that all that happened in the UK and with the US with the riots and all that, that's the animosity and the fighting is just starting?
It's the beginning. It's like it's been looked upon as a turning point. The George Floyd case is being looked upon as a turning point because it's making people wake up to the fact that people need to be treated as equals. You can't have some people treated better than others. All people should be treated the same, all with the same type of justice. And people are really caring. So it's like this is bringing the goodness out of people. The problem with a lot of the riots is there are people being sent in to create riots, God knows from where. But the people protecting on the protesting for George Floyd seem to be peaceful.
Yeah. What, so you said that, so I'm gathered from what you said there, you think that the virus will subside soon, but it's the aftermath that we've got to worry about.
Well, I think the aftermath is going to be much, I mean, I think the aftermath is going to cause much more damage than the virus did. But it's, I think other things are going to happen. Nothing to do with the virus or its aftermath. It's like there are lots of prophecies of waves hitting the coast in different places. It's like, from my understanding, it is not a very good idea to be in Japan in the next 4 years or on the west or east coast of America.
Why?
Because they may, because they might sink.
Sink?
Well, there have been prophecies around, again, not mine. sorry. There's been prophecies around of Japan sinking to the bottom of the ocean. But it was supposed to have happened sort of 10, 20 years ago in the prophecies I read about then. But sometimes things, you know, arrive at the wrong, different timing.
Oh.
So the feeling is that be careful of being in Japan. And be careful of, don't be anywhere near New York or California on the coast.
And you think they're
going to... tsunamis. But again, we don't know exactly when.
So you think, and you think that LA and the whole of California and New York are going to be at the bottom of the ocean?
Well, no, I don't think they would be at the bottom of the ocean. I think they would just be flooded.
Okay. But Japan's going to be flooded at the bottom of the ocean.
Well, I mean, that's what people have said, and I can't tell you who said that because I honestly can't remember. I've read about it a long time ago. I mean, at one point, I rang up all my Japanese clients and warned them to get out of Japan. And that was before the nuclear eruption there. I remember there was about four or five of them. I actually rung them up and spoke to them and said, you know, it's not... I don't want to terrify you. It may not happen, but I would like to warn you, it's in the prophecies that something bad will happen here. It's not a good idea to be in Japan. And they all said, well, you know, they thanked me profusely for warning them, but they said they couldn't get out for whatever reason. And a few of them later wished they had. That was before when the nuclear thing went. What's it called? The thing that's sort of poisoning the fish still.
So you think that the virus will probably subside maybe soon, or like things will return to normal in that regard, but it's you said the aftermath is going to be more dodgy, and you said that it will be at its worst in a couple of years from now. In sort of what sort of way?
Well, I say from what I've heard from other people is that it's like there could be tsunami waves, there could be land mass changes, as in land coming up, new land appearing out of the sea, and land which is here going into the sea. There's prophecies that the North Pole will shift 17 degrees from Siberia into Russia. And that, of course, would make tsunami waves and no doubt change land masses as well as changing temperatures. But this is the problem with it's like the way I understand it is there are various different possible futures. And which future line we go down will be decided upon by everybody on the planet's consciousness level. Now, the people are on a higher consciousness level and sending light to everything and making much more power in a more positive direction than the people who are thinking more negatively. But the general feeling is we could go this way, or we could go that way, or we could go that way. It will depend on mass consciousness. But the overall feeling is we will land up at the end of it, possibly with a lot less people on the planet, but in a happier life. Because we will no longer have war, we will care about other people as equals, we will be living in a better system.
And what do you think is going to happen to comedy?
Well, I think it probably is going to have a great place to play. Because people, when things are being difficult, you need comedy. Comedy is particularly needed when people are going through a difficult time. Like comedy was useful during the Second World War. So comedy, I think, you know, has great potential to keep people sick. Because when you can see the funny side, when things get really bad in life, you do need to see the funny side. Because otherwise it's difficult to survive.
Yeah. How does this may not be clear, this question I'm about to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How does the other side affect us as a whole?
You mean the people who've died by the other side?
By the world, yeah.
Dead people. I'm just checking whether by the other side, you mean people with a different viewpoint who are alive on the planet, or do you mean people who've died?
I mean the other world that you're specialising in.
Well, I assume you're talking about people who've died. Yes, they can affect one. If they're hanging around and haven't gone to the light. Many people have guides who come from the light, who are good people, who are helping them along. People who get very negative can get, many people don't go to the light when they die. They get stuck on the earth plane and they may be hanging on to somebody who they love or somebody they want to manipulate. So, sometimes, yes, people need to have spirits removed from them. I mean, the negative ones, the positive spirits don't sit inside, they give people free will. They're not being a nuisance. It's the negative ones. Or at least they're not so much negative, but there's people that shouldn't be there. It's like your body should only have your soul in it, not 30 other spirits as well.
Yeah.
I mean, some people go around a bit like a bus and just pick up lost spirits, and then they keep changing their mind about things. They begin to think they're losing their rag, and they just really need to have their spirits sent to the light and be taught how not to do it again.
So, okay, and how what's it called? And what's the question I want to ask? I've forgotten already. No, it's something. So how? And one thing I find quite interesting, because you don't have the cards, and you do have the cards. Do How do you find doing readings in Zoom calls? Because you're not with the actual person. It must be maybe a little bit harder. Or...
Well, yes. Readings and healings, yes, they did have a challenge at the beginning. Because I was doing readings on the phone for donkey's years, but not on Zoom. The problem I found was it was kind of being able to see the person affected my concentration. And the fact that I knew they were looking at me, but not like in front of me, also affected my concentration. So in the beginning, I just did readings and healings with people on sound only on Zoom or Skype. So we'd have the video on at the beginning so we could say hello and get the feel of each other. And then we'd turn the video off and do it on silent. That's how I did at the beginning. But now it's like most people have stands for their, like I'm on a stand at the moment and you probably are because you're not moving around. But people who are holding something will be jogging up and down, at which point I tell them to put it down so that they're not jumping about the screen. But in the beginning, I mean, the readings bit was the main problem there, as I've just said, was people being able to see people, because I wasn't used to it when they went in the room, but I got used to that after a while. And with healings, I just found it so exhausting, because when people came here in person, I would have my hands on their shoulders and I would be picking up information mainly through my hands. The rest of my body would pick up a bit of information, but most of the information came in through my hands. And that when I was doing it on Zoom, of course, my hands were absolutely useless. And I had to pick up the information on, like, through all the cells of my body. And I found that 1.5 hours was, once I did 1 hour, 3/4, and that nearly finished me off. And I said, from now on, I'm not doing longer than 1.5 hours at one go. And I just found it completely and utterly exhausting. And the exhaustion went, I mean, there was no way could I do 2 in one day, for example. I didn't really like doing them in consecutive days. I like to do one, and then have a day off, and then do another one the next day. But with time, it just got less exhausting, and now I can do more than one. I mean, I think 3 is the absolute maximum I do in one day now. Probably 2 would be a better maximum. But they don't exhaust me like they used to, because I'm now have become good at picking information up through the ether or through the energy fields or whatever without needing to do it through my hands. So it's been a challenge. I mean, at the beginning, I think now the worst thing actually is the amount of admin time, because before people would just ring up, make an appointment, turn up, have the appointment, pay me, leave, and that would be the end of it. But when you're doing something on Zoom, it's endless emails backwards and forwards or text messages or whatever discussing the time, and then they sometimes want to discuss the results, and then somebody wants to change their time. So I just find the amount of admin has suddenly become enormous. So whereas I save time through not needing to get somebody up the staircase, take their coat off, give them a cup of tea, chat to them, I save a lot of time. Like a 1 hour appointment now is 1 hour, whereas before it could have easily turned into 2 hours because they'd be just chatting or whatever for the rest of the time. So I've saved some time in that direction, but I think overall I lose time because of about the amount of admin it involves.
Mm. Is and with your field as a whole and doing your job, how do you feel like in each field and people in the top of the field, they always talk about like learning and improving, being an ever-growing process. How does that sort of apply in your job as a whole? How do you feel that you have to you keep learning and growing and improving
with your every now and again, one gets a one-off, somebody that has a problem that one's never helped with before. And as I've often said to people, they will say to me on the phone, "Oh, have you ever, you know, helped somebody with whatever it is they have before?" And I would say no, but there's no reason why you shouldn't be the first. And then I usually would have a tremendous success. So people often produce bigger challenges and you learn how to deal with it. A lot of it is learning how to deal with the admin of it, or when to put your foot down and refuse to be contacted again on a certain subject matter. But on the healing front, though, I mean, I have noticed that whereas in the past somebody might have needed to come to see me once a fortnight for a year, now once a fortnight for maybe 6-8 weeks would be enough. Because my ability to bring about change is somehow, I've got better at it through practice, and is also to do with healing one's own life. Because the more my own life is healed, the more effective I can be. Because I don't have so many blocks.
It's a bit like, I watch some of these podcasts or something with the people, and they say that if they're growing, they can give a lot more. They say that once you take care of yourself, then you can start taking care of other people.
Yes. I mean, yep, it's true. I mean, one of the things is not getting overwhelmed by usually the admin or people that ring up for a chat at midnight.
Yeah.
Or keep ringing back, you know, ring back. They ring for something and then you get on with something else for 5 minutes and they ring back again and again and again. That all gets very tedious. Sorry, what was your question?
I was saying that the point I was making is that once you've sort yourself out and you help yourself out.
Yes. So, yes, I mean, I still have to heal parts of my own life. I've always been fairly good at self-healing. In a complete emergency, I know a whole heap of people I can go to. But the clearer I get myself, the clearer the information I can give other people, and the better I will be at helping them get better, because my own... It's like, let's take a simple example. In my very early days of doing readings, I had somebody who rang up to make an appointment because she didn't know whether or not to have an abortion. And I realized I had very strong views on that. And I realized that would get in the way. I made a point of not letting my views get in the way. The result was I pushed her in the direction the opposite of my views, which wasn't ideal anyway. All I can say is that she finally, she went for the opposite of what I recommended. I mean, the whole thing was chaos, but she was happy with the final, whatever. I can't remember what she did in the end, but she was finally happy with the outcome. But it's like when you are not clear on it, when you've got rid of your own problems, you don't judge other people's. And so you can let it be however the person is. But if you can get angry yourself because you don't like somebody else's opinions or whatever, then that's a block for you to be able to help them.
And what you said there is a big sort of advice for life, and why a lot of people gossip about other people or they do nasty things because they can't handle their own stuff. Can I ask you another question on top of that?
Yes.
One thing I've found interesting is that we live in an age that's a lot more sensitive than perhaps previous years. And like when people sort of take drugs or they do this and that, it never solves the problem, but they still keep taking it, don't they?
They're running away. It's a running away mechanism. If you want to not think of your problems, if you want to then, you know, take a drug, eat too much cake, whatever, it masks the problem and you don't need to think about it.
Doesn't it make it work?
And the cure often is in looking at what is really going on.
And doesn't it make it worse as well, in a way?
Sorry, what do you mean?
The longer you run away from it, doesn't it make it worse?
Oh, yes. The longer you run away from it, the worse it gets, yes.
and because it sort of damages their health as well, doesn't that also exacerbate the problem?
Yes, yes. I mean, some people spend their entire lives running away, but you also don't know what somebody else's life path is. Some people have come down here to know what it's like to live as a drug addict and to live and die as a drug addict. That's their life path. Some people have come down to do it, but to recover. It's like you don't know what other people's life path is. So whenever one is doing healing, you always check that it feels right. That you're not going to sort of bugger somebody up so they can't do what they came down here to do. The idea is before you're born, you have a sort of life plan of why you're coming down to earth, what you want to learn about. Stopping somebody learning about that is not a good thing.
Ooh, that's honest, but that's quite controversial.
Yeah, there's some book, I can't remember, it's got the name Billy in it, Billy's Afterlife or something like that, of somebody who had a brother, Billy, who was a drug addict, and he took an overdose and died, but then she started to talk to him. And the whole book is channeled information from Billy, and it's fairly fascinating.
Because sometimes I'll do things and I'll get a gut feeling about it, but then sometimes it's wrong. Oftentimes it's right, but there are times when it's wrong.
Well, the thing with a gut feeling is you have to be able to tell the difference between what is a gut feeling and what is your unresolved problems prompting you. If you've got unresolved problems, it's more or less impossible to tell the difference between them and a true gut feeling. And that's why dealing with past problems is good, because it means that every time you get a gut feeling, you can believe in it, because you know what subject matters you may be hung up on. I mean, to give you an example, I was once in London, in Heathrow Airport, and a friend was coming out to collect me early in the morning. And she said, be there at 8:30 in the Royal, picking me up. And I said, well, I could maybe go out a bit earlier, about 8:15 or 8 o'clock. She said, no, she said, Felina, don't. I won't get there before 8:30. Just sit in a comfortable chair and don't come out before 8:30. So there I was sitting in this comfortable chair, and as we got to 8:10, 8:15, I got a very, very strong feeling to go out to the meeting place. But I thought to myself, no, I know I've got hang-ups on this on the subject matter. I don't think it was travel I got hang-ups on. And so I thought, no, I'll stick it out and I won't go out till 8:30. Well, finally at 8:20, it got too much for me and I went out. And it turned out she'd been there for 10 minutes. She'd got there early. So it had been a gut feeling rather than a problem feeling. But had I cleared up that my travel problem before that time, I would have known it was a gut feeling. So if you say sometimes your gut feeling is wrong, it may well be when it's attached to one of your fears and it's not actually your gut feeling. You just can't tell the difference.
That's interesting. Yes, that's, And you mentioned another point. You mentioned that, what's it called? So what's this issue in terms of, you probably get this question a million times over, but there seems to be some big sort of hoopla and stories over these sort of Ouija boards, as it were.
Right. Well, I always recommend to people not to play with Ouija boards, because they actually are very dangerous for your sanity. If you're actually wanting to communicate with spirits, it's about the slowest method you could possibly choose, because it spells everything out letter by letter. But there have been cases of people who have lost their sanity through it. And it's because they get addicted to, like, they can't look at printed word without their finger jumping around, picking up different letters and different words and making messages. Mm. So I've heard of people who've got this type of sickness. And sometimes it's like, the thing is, the people know nothing when they play with Ouija boards. They usually know nothing about protection. So if they do pick pick up. They either don't pick up a spirit at all, at which point they find it's a waste of their time and never do it again. Or some low-life spirit who's died and not gone to the light, who happens to be knocking around, thinks, oh, this would be fun. Let me, you know, take them on the wild goose chase. And that's what happens. So you're either picking up low spirits, which are really not going to be much helpful, and the worst, they could become attached to you and make your life sort of, well, much more unpleasant. Or at best, nothing happens at all, then you're lucky and you get bored after a while. So I would say never play with a Ouija board. The thing is, if you know what you're doing and you want to contact the dead, there's quicker ways. Nobody in their right mind would choose a Ouija board when they can speak directly to spirit. I mean, if you're with a friend, would you choose to type?
No.
And listen to their answers through typing, particularly if they're only do one finger typing rather than this sort of typing?
Yeah.
No, you'd only do that if you know if there's something wrong with them and they couldn't speak.
You said something about what's it called in terms of like negativity and all that, and Davis there because they haven't found a place or they manipulate. In what way can you sort of be manipulated in a way?
Well, by spirits.
Yeah.
Well, it depends. I mean, good ones around can sort of, you get a feeling at times to do something good. That can often be coming from your guardian angel or spirit guide. Sometimes people feel that they really want to do something really negative and something they feel they shouldn't. And yet they get this overpowering desire to so do it and do it. It's also why accident spots, why you get an accident spot. Because there was a time in the place in India, I saw the place, there was a straight road that was as straight as, I mean, mathematically completely straight. And in the middle of it was an accident spot. And the lorries were terrified of driving over this spot because the chance of having a sort of serious accident was very high. And somebody I know bought the land and he put up a shrine to Our Lady, even though most of them are Hindus out there, but he put up a shrine to Our Lady on the accident spot and had it blessed. And when I saw him, that he'd done that some like 10, 20 years earlier, there'd never been an accident since. And lorry drivers automatically would stop and put some money or light a candle in the little altar to Our Lady, even though they were Hindus. And they would still thank him to this day for protecting their lives. Now, what has such happened in that spot is that somebody had a genuine accident, but the people hadn't gone to the light. They probably went sort of spiritually advanced enough to know that they were dead, and they didn't automatically go to the light, so they got stuck on the road, and after a while they attracted another vehicle with another accident. After a while there were quite, you know, a few hundred people all stuck there on the road. So it became an accident spot because you were driving over dead spirits of dead people, as it were. By removing them, it just went back to being a straightforward normal road. So it's like sometimes when people have jumped off underground stations or jumped off onto the track and have been saved before they died, they will have said something like, I don't know what came over me, something just made me jump. Well, it's like if somebody else had jumped from there previously, and you are maybe the person was feeling, well, they would have been feeling suicidal and very negative. And if you are feeling a bit negative and you stand in the same spot that they jumped from, there's a possibility that you will pick up their negative energy and then you get this over. And they had the overwhelming desire to jump, and so you get it too. That's why if sort of the powers that be had any sense and knew how these things worked, every time somebody committed suicide or there was an awful killing or something somewhere, you would have the place cleansed and blessed to make certain you don't attract another one.
Oh, shit. And, that's very deep there. What? So if what's the question I'm going to get into now? You're giving me into not, okay. But how can you feel as if you're being manipulated or guided? How can you tell?
Well, it's not coming from you. You know, you feel you have a great desire, you want to do something which you know you don't want to do. I mean, it can sound crazy. If you don't suffer from it, you've got no idea what it's like. But it's like something demanding that you drink when you don't like alcohol. Or demanding that you eat cake when you don't actually like sugar. You get this pressure to do something that you really don't like doing. And you find the pressure is difficult to get rid of. Or it can mean that you are constantly going around doing nice things to people and you know it's not you. You're just about to shout or say something nasty to somebody when you get this strong feeling you have to say something nice. And so you say something nice. So you can find it. Yes, so it's like it's when it's not you. When this is not you. People know when they're not themselves.
Oh, when someone says, oh, I'm sorry for shouting you. That's not normally like me. You think that that's...
Well, people know. I mean, people usually know when something is... It's usually when you're being manipulated. Like, good spirits don't really manipulate, they suggest. Manipulation is done by more negative spirits that can be very negative or just stuck dead people. But people notice when they're being influenced to do something they weren't naturally wanting to do. Mm. And if you can't understand it, it probably means it's never happened to you. Or it can mean that you've been under possession for all of your life and don't know what it's like to be the other way.
Ha ha! Too much. What? And you wouldn't know.
Well, if you only have one leg and lived in a place with one-legged people, you wouldn't know the normal was to have two legs.
I know. I had a bit of a funny situation yesterday. I didn't want to. I was presented with an opportunity of helping other people, but someone asked me to do it, who I was friends with, but I decided that I would help, even though it would maybe help a few people that I don't like, just because I felt this isn't the time for grudges and all that. You've got to let things go.
Yes, yes. Well, I've just listened to some video this morning that said something along those lines of it's particularly good for you when you help people you don't like.
I didn't want to help, but then I thought it's better not to. It's good for you, but if someone's very toxic and you help them, then you're not really doing much good.
Well, you have to be careful in life. There's different reasons why one doesn't like people. I mean, you have to look after yourself, but looking after yourself doesn't mean become completely and utterly selfish. It means that you're much better with helping other people when you have looked after yourself. So if you have people around you who just rile you and knock you up the wrong way the whole time, who just cannot see things the way you see them, then you know you need to get rid of them from your life. I've been going around Facebook recently blocking people left, right and center because I thought I just no longer do I need people to be rude. If somebody can have an argument, fine, but you can have an argument politely, but if you start being rude, I just block them. I think forget it.
Well, that person that bothered you, he's well known for having a few issues and being a bit...
Yes, but there would be many others as well as him.
Yeah, well, it's comedies of... Yeah, one person's... I was listening to a podcast with Simon Cain and a South African, what's it called, festival producer. And he said stand-up comedy is filled with some incredibly sensitive souls in a very insensitive industry, which is...
Yes, I think that's probably a good way of putting it.
It's a fun, I mean, I find, I'd say about 65 or maybe 70% of comedians are okay. They don't mind, but there's a good number of them that are not. And that's the thing.
Yes.
You don't know what's happened to them and this and that, but you just got to, so one thing I've found is that I'm sometimes can be a bit too nice, or I'm a bit too open and honest. And I end up helping the wrong sort of people. And the thing is about that is there. Well, it's, I've gotten, fine, I'll be open and honest, but I don't, so I've got a group of comedy mates that I'm all right with, three of them. One of them I don't really like because he's a bit of a, like, he's a taker and he doesn't give anything back. And like, it's a bit like, I feel like I'm their dad or something, and they're trying to imitate certain aspects of me or trying to take ideas off me and stuff like that. And it's a bit like, yeah, I don't want to be around you sort of thing.
Yes. Well, I mean, the thing is, if somebody is making, at the moment, it's not a time to be neutral in life. You need to be going in a positive direction.
Yeah.
And if you, and it's like, if you feel that somebody is making you, or not, they're not making you, but if you are reacting to that person in such a way that it's knocking you backwards, then you need to have less to do with that person. Now, there are times when you can't because you're related to them, or you've known them since they were two. Or, you know, you're best friends with their sister or mother or something. And then you have to try and... Well, I found one of the best ways is when they start to argue, don't answer. Just ignore anything that's written. And just because then people forget and get on with something else. But if you answer, they've been just reminded about you. And then they think of something else more to say.
Don't laugh about this, but I had a situation. So I went to, did I tell you about this? But I went to Philip Golia. Do you know of him?
No.
Well, he's taught like Sacha Baron Cohen and many comedians and many sort of performing artists, and it's sort of like a clown school. And it's funny. I like him, and I like the teachers there, and they're very good. But there's a very, it's a bit, yeah, I don't necessarily get on with the people there. So they have different values to me. Like, I'm very sort of committed and hard working. I want to get things done. They're the opposite of that. Like, I'd have some of them sit near me, try and listening into my conversations. Not my sort of people. I want to go back and finish the course when I'm there, but I also don't want to be, I have to be around them. But I don't want to be around sort of certain types of characters. I want to be people that lift you up, you lift them up, and you help each other out. Forward together. And if you help each other, you go forward. If you're just trying to take and steal and be somebody else and try and steal my characteristics or ideas, and you're doing it in such a sneaky way as well, then it's a bit like, I don't want to be around you sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm actually doing a joke in this for Lena. There's three people that I don't like, sort of toxic people that try and bring you down to their level because you're trying to do things. And I don't like toxic people that don't give anything back. And when you give them something, they expect you to give a lot of stuff back. And I don't like people that talk bad about others behind their back, because it's a bit like you've got nothing else better to do.
Yes.
So the time you spent bitching or doing this and that, like with the guy that bothered you, the time he spent bothering you, he could have read a book, or he could have gone and researched something. He could have maybe invested in something, or he could have done this, he could have done that. So many more productive things, but he decided, there's not enough good things going on in my life. I'll just try and spit my venom on someone who I think's a victim, and to try and take my rubbish out of them, because I can't handle my own rubbish.
Yes. Yes.
It's
I mean, there's been a lot of amongst the, we often we think of ourselves as light workers, and there's been a lot of information given out to light workers saying, you know, although one is trying to love everybody and all the rest of it, there are people out there who are being very negative, and it's fine to block them.
Yeah.
you don't need to, I mean, you can love them, but you don't need to actually communicate with them.
It's, yeah, it's just, what's the bit I want to get up? Yeah, this is a funny bit, actually, because I tried contacting them. I started getting, they would say hello, and then they ignore me. But then I just realized they just didn't like me, and they're not my kind of people. And then when I behave in other ways with other people that do like me, it's all fine, and we get on okay. So it's, yeah, I don't know. I'm going roundabout here, but it's just the lockdown. I think one thing, maybe you disagree on it, but I think it gives sort of people's true colours.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it's been very interesting from that point of view. And it's given lots of people the opportunity to stop and think, what am I doing in life? Am I doing the right thing? Do I need to do something different? I mean, it seems that many people are taking the time to maybe change their approach to what they're doing. Some people are busily trying to make ends meet and are just trying to put everything that was online. And it's understandable because, I mean, you do need to make ends meet. But yes, I mean, one is learning things. I've been finding it very interesting actually watching what people who I know are on a healing path, what they actually share nonstop. I mean, there's a holy man I know of who's English but lives in France, who just goes from one conspiracy theory to the next. Now, I know that some of them may not be conspiracy theories, they may just be facts. I don't really care personally whether they're facts or not, but nowhere is there something about light and love or that you would expect from somebody who is on the spiritual path. It's just to do with lining everybody up to do something about something. And then there's somebody else I know of who's got a frightfully, I won't mention names, but frightfully well known in the field as being very advanced. And all he's doing is doing one conspiracy theory after another. I mean, I just did a lot of going down their timelines to see if I could actually find the spiritual post anywhere on it. And no. So it's like some people have sort of got stuck in conspiracy theories rather than getting beyond them. People refuse to have anything to do with them at all. So, but I'm just interested in what people on the spiritual path, who I thought were on the spiritual path, may not be on such a spiritual path that I thought.
It's, can I, one thing that I found very interesting is, how come a lot of people, one thing I find very interesting is, people sometimes can be duped very quickly into someone's true intentions. Like Bill, do you know Bill Burr? You obviously know him, Bill Burr, but he makes a good joke about what they called a feminist man is the saddest way to get a woman. And I think that's, you know, you see some of these sort of very weak plastic pretend nice men trying to, and you, yeah, I don't know, it's funny. Sometimes it annoys me a bit, because how can you not see who this person truly is just because they pretend to be nice and this and that? Can you not see the truth there? Like, it's, come on, I'm not that, I'm not clever, and I can see things, so why can't you? It's a bit...
Well, they probably will do see it, but they don't care. No. Or at least it's a way of being able to say something nasty to somebody. It's a game. It's like people learn how to say something nasty. Like people learn how to swear at somebody without ever using a swear word. People can get very good at it when they completely put people down, but never say any of the not okay words. People can learn how to be very underhand and say something to you, which completely takes you weeks to recover from or whatever. But anyone witnessing it can't see anything wrong with it. People get very good at this. Yeah. They're playing out their own agendas.
It's, yeah. Well, one of the things I want to do the podcast is I want to look at things. I want to sort of understand things. And effectively, yeah, I love podcasts, like watching them, listening to them, and just talking to all these different people. It's been interesting talking to you because there's so many, like, you pointed them in things. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know this. Oh, that's interesting. And you gave me, I think one of the last times we saw you gave me a fantastic bit of life advice. And you said, not to care too much about what people think. And you said, be careful about your relationship with people because you don't know when you might need them. And that was...
Yes. I mean, I have found that in life at times when I really want to yell at somebody that I perhaps need to hold myself back because I might need them at some point in the future.
Hmm.
But the podcast is sound only, is it, rather than photo as well? Or is it photo as well?
It's photo as well, but if the person wants it just to be sound, I've got no problem.
No, it's okay. I've just wondered because I was, I just wondered whether you were recording the picture as well. No, it's okay.
I find it more interesting. I would prefer it if I had to have all of them with video because it's more interesting seeing the person's body language, how they're interacting than just hearing the sound. It's more interesting.
Yes. By all means, yes. So where are you going to post it?
I'm just going to post it on my channel. It's...
Yeah, but are you going to post it on Facebook? Someone's got a link to it.
What's it called? You said... Yeah, I've seen that there's some... I don't want to... Yeah, I have a feeling that, you know, some of the people, yeah, I probably won't post that particular one on Facebook because I know that people are bothering you. So if I'm not careful, it may give them more stuff to work with you.
Oh, yeah. But perhaps you could give me the link in Messenger so I've got it, could you?
Yeah.
Email me the link or something.
And also what I want to do is... what I'm going to do with some of the other podcasts is I'm going to shorten it, do little clips on my Facebook channel, and I'll promote it. And then people will say, oh, this is this and that, and I get to promote the other person's work, and they get to have a look at the podcast. But, it's been a good chat. I liked it. I think one thing that I find quite funny with people is that one thing I find quite interesting is with a lot of things, what is it with people not wanting to just work and just do something rather than try and be clever and like not do anything sort of thing and try and be somebody else, try and do this. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Like one thing I've learned through the pandemic is that sometimes I've not really chosen what I let around me, like my friends and the people like that. And yeah, I'm already not liked in the comedy circuit to a degree, but it's going to get a lot worse because I'm going to kick a few more people out. Because I want to decide what I want to let around me. I want to be with people that are better than me, or at least have the same sort of good intentions, work ethic, do better. You know, I want to be pointed where I'm going wrong. I want to get better. I want to grow. I don't want to be looking over my shoulder at someone that doesn't want to try and take stuff, not do anything. And that's the thing that I've learned from the pandemic as a whole. And
good.
One thing I want to do is shut up a lot and just be quiet. Because you don't know who someone is until you get to know them. And so I want to surround myself with the right kind of comedians, the right kind of people. And yeah, that's it. I want to grow and be a better person, be nice to the people that I like. And just, yeah, that's it. I'm quite young and sort of naive and innocent in a way. And I make a lot of mistakes with people, but I never mean any sort of harm by it. And sometimes with people, sometimes I get a bit uncomfortable around people, but I'll say something nice just not to, because I don't know what to say. And I get a bit, one thing that gets a bit nervous sometimes is when you tell them the truth, even if you've not said it in a nice, nasty way, people completely lose it. I was remembering this before I came back here, I was doing an assignment with a couple of people and I told them the truth in a really nice way and they completely lost it. And it wasn't like I was being brutal, but they lost it.
Yeah, people do that when they don't want to look at it and you've hit the nail on the head. This is something I discovered a long time ago. If you've got it right, and they get angry. If you've got it wrong, people don't get angry. Like if I were to say to you, oh, you're a thief. You steal things out of people's houses. You might think I'd lost the plot or something, but you wouldn't get overly angry with me. It'd be ridiculous. But if you were, you would. I mean, I remember once having one of my niece's husbands here. I left him in my flat alone for an hour while I went somewhere, or 2 hours, and I came back and found the kitchen door broken. So I said, what happened here? And he got fairly aggressive, saying, wasn't me, it wasn't me, I didn't do anything, it wasn't me. And I knew it was, because you only get aggressive when it's true.
Yeah.
And it was just like he'd only just recently come over from abroad and didn't know how strong he was. They had come from a different culture, didn't realise how strong he was, and tried to open a thing which wasn't a drawer, and I had to get a man in to mend it. But it's like people, and I found with healing it's very useful if you can actually tell them exactly what they're doing that's maybe making their life not work. They will then admit it, and it can just change just from you've got it dead. Like, I've had people that say things like, well, nobody ever likes me. Whatever I do, people don't like me.
Yes.
And you tell them exactly what it is they're doing to make people not like them, and they're absolutely mind-boggled because they didn't know they were doing it. They stopped doing it, and all of a sudden, everyone starts to like them. You know, it's the quickest sort of response of all time. But when people get angry, you've always got it because they're defending themselves. People don't get angry, however bad you suggest something, if it's not true.
Mm.
They only get angry if it is true, but they didn't want you to know that.
One thing I found funny, so I did the Heckler's Night a while ago. I like it. It's my favourite night that I'm doing online.
And you're not still recording, are you?
Tell you what, I'll stop if you want me to.
Right. No, it's okay. You can go on. I just wanted to know whether we're still recording or not.
Yeah, I'm planning to record until we stop talking and we leave it.
Okay.
What I did a while, I did the Heckler's Night on Sunday, and I was doing a few hecklers, but the comedian, she's very good. Like, she's like sort of supporting people like Frankie Boyle, and she's very good. And she did say a lot of things that were true. And what I got in the position was, yeah, it's true, and it's sort of an insult, and I just didn't know what to do or say. So I tried to say something, but it came across as wrong. But it got me down a bit for maybe about an hour or two, but it wasn't really meant in jest. It's part of the game, and you've got to get thick skin, because the thicker your skin is, the better for a lot of things. And I got upset for a bit, but then I calmed down a bit. And so when it happens again, then it won't bother me as much. That's what I feel sometimes with people who are too sensitive. You've got to go through the pain maybe with harsh comments or this and that.
Some people actually are sensitive, and it's the way they've been made. They're what's called hypersensitive or whatever. And somebody did a study on it and discovered like something like 10%. I'm not certain the exact percent, but it might be about 10%. Like 10% of humans are overly sensitive. 10% of worms are overly sensitive. 10% of dolphins are overly. You mention it. And it's thought of to be part of the survival, because it was explained that if you were, take deer, for example, if 10% of deer are overly sensitive, 90% go out for a graze. The 10% hold back. Now, if there happens to be a tiger, the 10% save the deer race, because they're not the ones that get eaten, because they've held back. On the other hand, if there aren't any tigers around, the 90%, the 10% starve instead, because the 90% is eating all the grass. But it's like, so it's useful having sensitive people in life, because they're careful not to take risks. And so they can help the survival of the species.
How do you feel when it's on the other foot sometimes, if someone points maybe a harsh truth that hurts you or says something? How do you cope with it?
Well, I might do a healing on it later. If someone's upset me or look at it, sometimes they've given me a bonus because they've kind of allowed me to know about something that needed healing in me that I didn't know needed healing in me. So it's like a gift. That that I can release the source of and therefore won't suffer from that again. Sometimes, I mean, it depends if someone's just been shouting and throwing their anger around. I then do a bit of smudging with sage and sort of just sit quietly and kind of just let everything calm down. But at least I'm not having them in my flat at the moment to do that. And people on the whole don't start screaming at you on Zoom, at least not yet.
What was that I wanted to get at? I've forgotten now. Sometimes you get engrossed and then you forgot what you wanted to say. No, it's bloody... I wanted to say something really good, but I've forgotten already. It'll come to me in a second. What do you make of one thing I find quite interesting is what do you make of people that are too interested in gossip or like bad things that are going on?
Well, it kind of gives energy. My family was very good at doing this. I was brought up with, not so much on the news, but kind of pulling other people to bits. One would just go around everybody and pull them to bits one after the other type of thing. And until I learnt that as an adult, this wasn't actually that sensible thing to do. I mean, I was in my 40s before I realised, not in my early adulthood. So what was the question again?
Yeah, what do you make of people that are a bit too inquisitive into negative things, like gossips or like, oh, you've got a problem with this person. Why have you got a problem with this person?
Because I'm trying to keep away from that at the moment, because at the moment I'm trying... The thing is, if we want the world to get better as quickly as possible, one then has to keep imagining a positive future in the light, with light. And when I read things, I've got certain people that constantly send me negative videos. Because they're not 100% up here. So I don't block them. But I just occasionally put a thumbs up and leave it at that. But if anybody else sends it to me, I mean, I don't watch it. Sometimes I look at the beginning and I would think, am I going to feel better or worse having watched this? If the answer is worse, I don't watch it. I'm now trying to think before I share anything on Facebook. Will people that read this feel better because they've read it or watched it, or will they feel worse? And I've actually taken quite a few friends who are supposed to be healers to task on this. On the post, I've said, you know, you're supposed to be a light worker. When you post stuff like this, it puts fear into people. You're supposed to be putting love into people, not fear into people. And I usually get an argument back along the lines of, well, I think people should get educated. And so, well, the thing that has been discovered is that people wake up when they're ready to wake up, not because you've been terrifying them. And so you're wasting your time. They wake up in their own time. They definitely won't wake up because you'd like them to. So, and it's like there's so much repetitive stuff. You know, once I know something, I have an opinion on something, I mean, I don't need any more videos proving to me that chemtrails exist, or there are so many things, or that Bill Gates is a bad person or whatever. I don't need endless bits of information on the subject. I've got it. I've read it. I've looked at it. I've come to a conclusion, and I'd like another subject matter now. But so many people just want to constantly fling stuff at you, the same stuff over and over again. And who are they really trying to wake up is themselves, I think, not you. They're trying to wake themselves up beyond that point of getting stuck in that stuff. Because I can see, it looks to me like there's three sets of people around at the moment, the way I look at it. Those who believe everything they hear and read, and on the whole are pretty terrified. Those that don't trust anything they see or read, and are sharing the so-called conspiracy theories, and then the people who are trying to concentrate on the light. And it's like, but to me, the idea of conspiracy theories is you read them, absorb them, look at them, decide which ones you'd like to follow, which ones you wouldn't, and then move on. But there's so many people that just go round and round in circles in them.
Yeah. It's interesting. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, things do seem better than they were in regards to things. And I don't know, things seem to have calmed down a bit, like with what went on last week and the week before. Do you feel
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at Facebook much less now. So I never would look at the news anyway, or hardly ever. So I have to look at Facebook occasionally, or look at the news headlines to see if the world is, you know, what's happening. But what isn't happening, if they've got it wrong. But I mean, I'm not spending nearly so much time on Facebook because I feel my energy draining. It's got a bad energy at the moment, and many people are saying that.
Yes, I think I agree. There's a lot of funniness going on with well, that's it. That's part of why this age is more sensitive than it was before. Like people, when they'll go out, interact and go to a park or play with their friends, they don't really do that anymore. They talk on the phone and it's much more fun.
People are, the wimphood is sort of, I mean, 100 years ago, people were much stronger and tough, but their immune systems were better then. They ate better food.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I mean, many people are very weak, and they're not looking after themselves. And of course, the lockdown's done nothing but make their immune systems worse, because their germs haven't had any practice. I mean, their immune systems haven't had any practice. They haven't had to do anything.
Well, it's what you make of it, because I find it funny sometimes when people say that they've not done anything, or like, because there is a lot you can do. You can still make use of the time.
Well, I think it depends again on people who are used to making their own entertainment, or people that have to rely on others. Hmm. If people have been running away from themselves and going and doing things so they don't need to actually look at themselves, those are the ones that are twiddling their thumbs at home with nothing to do all day. But the people who've been used to making a life are just getting on with what they've always done.
Oh, you've hit the nail on the head there. Yes. It was funny. I was talking, as I said before, there's a few people that I'm probably not going to speak to, and there's a lot more as well. But there was one of them said to me, you know, we're in a lockdown, there's not really much we can do. And I just thought that's one of the most stupid things I've ever heard. Like, how could you say that? Come on. Look at it. There's YouTube videos. There's this, there's that. And it's just...
Yes, well, I mean, it varies from person to person. I've had people that sort of said that they never watched so much telly in their life. I haven't watched any more telly than I used to watch, which is about one program, two or three programs a week. I haven't upped it at all because I have been too busy doing my own things. I mean, I really find that feeding yourself properly and having exercise once a day is almost a full-time occupation. Mm. And I've been running a few meditation groups. At least I do. I'm running online meditation on Wednesday nights and Sunday nights. So I've got one or two other groups going in under the healing fields. And I just find taking life slowly. I haven't got nothing to do. I've got plenty to do. But how are we coming to the end of this?
Yeah.
So I thought it was 1.5 hours and we've passed that.
Yes, we have a little bit. I've only had one that's gone longer than this, but the rest of them all finish within an hour or two. But yeah. That's sign like, Marvin, I'm bored now. I've got to go. I'm joking.
Yeah, well, I have got lots of other things to do all day.
Yeah, it's fine. It's me too as well. But look, it's been a good chat, and yeah, hopefully I'll see you at my gig soon.
Yep. Okay.
But one thing that I would like you to do, so tell us a bit about where people can buy your book and like some of the other sort of your services you provide, if they're interested.
All right. Well, my website is felina.co.uk, P philena, philena.co.uk. My book's website is knowthatyouareloved.com. You can get from my website to my book's website. It's advertised on every page. It can be bought from my website. You can get a digital version. It says bookstore page, but you can get a hard copy, or at least it's more like a soft copy because it's a paperback copy. You can get that from Amazon. And you'll get it from Amazon in the UK, Amazon in Canada, Amazon in Canada. And if you're a fluent, and it can also be bought in Russian. And the link to the Russian edition is on my book's website. So I think, provided you've got the spelling of my name right, which I assume you'll have written down somewhere.
Yeah, I'll just copy it off your Facebook and then.
Yeah. So say philena.co.uk, you can see all the things that I do, and everything I do on that I can do online, except for the one that I call plant spirit healing, which I haven't spoken about now, but it's the only thing on the website I can't do online with you. So I think, and you'll find me on Facebook. The book's got a Twitter, Know You Are Loved, I think. I had to leave out the word that because Twitter had to be not too many characters, but I'm not really doing anything on Twitter at the moment. So, but I am fairly active. And the book's got a page also on Facebook, a rather inactive one. I try to remember to write the old thing on it occasionally. And it's called, again, Know That You Are Loved, the name of the book. And should anybody want to ring me up, it's better to ring my landline, which is 07-602-4724. My mobile is, I'm not giving that number out. It's half the time I'm not looking at it, but anyone wants to ring me. Anyway, the numbers are on my websites as well.
Right. I'll publish the details in the video. And yeah, I'll see you when this is all over.
Okay, great. Okay, look after yourself. Bye-bye. Yeah.